On today's podcast, a couple of old guys give some advice to anybody else who's not so old. Brian and I are going to talk about what gaming advice we, as older gamers, might have for younger gamers out there on the interwebs.
All right. So I'm just going to go ahead and I formulated these in like kind of a series of questions that that we think some younger gamers would have for us old timers, or at least we thought they were interesting questions.
Yeah.
So these are just some ideas, some things that we've run into as older gamers, maybe some experience that we have that we can pass on to sort of future generations. So let's get started.
Sure. I mean, we've got to have something to speak for the gray hairs. I've got more gray in my beard, but you got a little bit in there, you know, but hopefully these gray hairs come with some wisdom, right? We'll see.
That's right. All right. So first question, how do you manage your time between gaming and other responsibilities as you've gotten older?
Poorly. Yeah, no, I will say time management is a struggle. I think for me personally, time management has always been a struggle. So for me, it's about prioritization. The first thing that comes first is family all the time. If there's, whatever it is that's important, it's family first. As Vin Diesel would say, you don't need friends when you've got family. Of course, he was talking about his friends, but that's a whole different topic. So for me, it's about, family comes first, obviously second. I'm a pastor. My job comes right after family, the church responsibilities, and those two fight pretty often for top tier billing. And then after that is, gaming, right? And fun and whatever is fun for me. And so I think in that vein, then I would say you've got, whatever time is left, and that has to get divvied up between self-care, play, rest. And so often, unfortunately, I do not get as much time for gaming as I would like. But I think the one way that I've carved out a little bit of time is by setting some designated times and saying, okay, these are game times, and the rest of this time is not game time. Right. So it's never an opportunity where I'm saying, well, I know we're supposed to have a family dinner right now, but my buddy wants to play games, so I'm going to go play games. No, it's, unless I say, hey, my buddy wants to play games later tomorrow night, I'm going to schedule it. It's a thought out thing. Then I'll make some time for it. But it's definitely a challenge. Brian, what about you? How do you make time for gaming? How do you prioritize your life time management?
Yeah, I think my answer is really similar. Just thinking through, this is definitely an area where I've struggled in the past. I think as gamers, probably we almost all run into this where, we just stay up way too late playing something, whatever it is. It might be a single player game. It might be a multiplayer game. Yeah. And totally like the next day you are just sad and you're tired all day long. I've totally been there and learned that lesson. And yeah, I think it's just about prioritization and having that realization ahead of time that like, okay, I really do need to, I got to have a cutoff point where I absolutely don't go beyond that, and make sure that I have some discipline and like hold myself to that, or I know I can just let it go. And again, the next day I'm going to be totally washed out. It's a thing too, where, you mentioned work and your family and so on. You have to balance all these things as well. It's not just about having, just having time to game, but it's also like how your game time also influences your life and interacts with it in terms of, it can have deleterious effects on your family life and, on your work as well. And so you need to prioritize those sort of real life relationships a lot of times. And sometimes that means like, hey, like maybe I had a long week at work and that's eating up a whole bunch of my time. And then all I really have time left for is my family. And like, you know, I go a few days or even a week and I just don't have any game time. And it's just like, sometimes that's just how it is. And we have to accept that. So it can be tough, but it is, you know, I think it's also something you can get better at over time. So,
right. I also think there's an inherent question there of what is the function that games are playing in your life? Right. For some people, the games are a gateway in a good sense, right? Games are a gateway to friendships, right? And so, maybe game time is time with your friends. For others, maybe gaming is, I know for my daughter who loves playing Gorilla Tag, gaming is a physical activity for her. So I actually don't mind. She's on Gorilla Tag for like an hour a day because she's actually working out her arms. Maybe there's better arm exercises, but she's getting some exercise in. She's playing Gorilla Tag. She's having fun. She's also interacting with her friends. I know for me, sometimes games have been just a time filler. And so nowadays, people are filling their time scrolling social media feeds. Well, wouldn't it be cool if you could fill that time instead of sitting in a doctor's waiting room scrolling social media feeds, if you were sitting there playing through a puzzle game, and interacting with your brain a little bit, or playing through a narrative and learning a story. So I think there's also an inherent question of how you fit games into your schedule is what role are they playing in your life? And is that important?
Yeah, I think that's a really important point that, we don't always want to think of like games as a bad thing, right? We've talked before on the podcast about how we can use games to connect with friends and family and use that time in kind of a very productive way in terms of our relationships too. So, we don't want to have the perspective of like game time is always, like a negative thing somehow. It can also be very positive in your life. And I think, especially if you are using it in that kind of relationship building way, whether that's, with somebody you're really close with, or maybe just your online friends, that can be valuable too. And so making some space for that and figuring out how that fits in my busy life. And like you said, maybe even scheduling time for that, if you need to, those are all great ideas. And so I think that's important to keep in mind as well.
Yeah.
All right. Next question that we came up with. Have you noticed any significant changes in gaming trends or communities over the years? And how have you adapted to these changes?
Gosh. Changes in gaming trends. When I was a kid, I think games felt like a very simple kind of, how do I put it? I feel like when I was a kid, games were very simple, right? And so it was like games were a thing you sat down and you played at the computer, you played, at your console. They were often linear. So games themselves have evolved. Because nowadays there are mobile games, there are console games, there's VR, games are open world, games are online. When I was a kid, we didn't have online games, period. Nothing was online when I was young. And now you've got online games, you've got games that are communities, right? World of Warcraft is a great example, like games that pretty much are a community. And then I think what was the second part? You said how the communities around games have evolved. I feel like when I was young, it was just whoever you could grab to sit on your couch with you, or, your friend comes over to your house and you can both play trading off on the controller with the same game. Eventually we got to LAN parties, and then eventually that grew into internet communities and online games. Now, games are, like I said, persistent online. You've got games like Helldivers that feels like you and a million other people are working towards the same goal. And then you've got Discord servers upon Discord servers upon Discord servers that are communities within themselves. And so I think the challenge for me sometimes is that there is a sense of FOMO, right? That fear of missing out, that you have to realize that we have the world at our fingertips in ways that we've never had before. When I was a kid, it was limited to you only had so much money, and so you only had so many cartridges to play your game, or you only had so many discs and hard drive space. And now you've got Xbox Game Pass, you've got cloud gaming. You could play, if you've got Xbox Game Pass, you probably have 10,000 hours worth of gaming content at your fingertips, and you will never get through it all. And so there's a certain recognition of that, that you have to just say, well, I'm going to not be able to finish every game. But it's a challenge, I think, to keep up with it. And in some ways, I think the best way to keep up with it is to not try to keep up with it. What do you think, Brian? How's gaming changed? You're a little older than I am. How has gaming changed since you were a kid?
Yeah, and I mean, again, I was thinking along similar lines that, you know, when I was younger, definitely if you were going to play multiplayer games, then you were in the same room, pretty much. And it wasn't until I got to like college that we were really playing games online. And so that's been a significant adaptation for sure in terms of the changes that I've had to adapt to. And, one of the things you touched on was like the proliferation of online communities and how varied they are. That's been a thing to adapt to too, in terms of like, you know, the way MMOs have evolved over the years and, you know, the variety of things you can do in games. And just the variety of communities that you can get plugged into. There's so many online communities that you can get plugged into now, that it's like you really have to choose which ones you're going to be a part of. Like when I was younger, it was like there really weren't that many online communities that existed, to go be a part of. I remember spending a lot of times like on Battle.net forums. Just because, you know, that was a huge online community and it was one of the few that was really, you know, super interactive. But now, like, I think you have to be like kind of choosier about what communities you're a part of and like, hey, what communities are like good for me and do I want to engage with? So that's been a big change over the years.
Yeah. I feel like the early days of online bulletin boards, right? The old BBS systems, things like that. But they felt very much like email, right? It was like you would post a question and you'd come back 3 or 4 days later to see if anybody answered it. Well, nowadays the communities all feel like live chat all the time, right? And so nobody's posting and coming back 3 days later to check. People are posting expecting immediate responses, which is another challenge, I think, then that it's like the 24-hour news cycle. Like, how do you keep up with a Discord server that's got, you know, since the last time you logged in and looked at it, you've got 400 messages to read through. It's challenging.
Yeah, that's a huge one. That just so like
got to choose where you go.
That's right. I mean, that's a great point in terms of Discord and some of these other similar communities where, you know, coming in and it's just hard to even keep up sometimes with one community and how much discourse is happening and how things can change so quickly. That's definitely something I've had to adapt to in terms of, you know, back in the day, so to speak, I think it just felt like you had more time to react to what was happening. And, you know, things on a lot of these servers happen really, really fast. And you're like, wait, what happened?
Yeah. And I'd be curious to know if some of that is like for us that we have more time responsibilities. And so we're checking in like once or twice every day, you know, versus perhaps a teenager over the summertime who's like, I got all the time in the world, you know, I'm going to check in 50 times an hour. I'd love to hear from some younger person who can tell us, you know, are we just way off base because we're just old and have too many time commitments or is this a real thing that it's hard to keep up with for young people?
Yeah, for sure. All right, next question.
Sure.
How do you stay competitive or skilled in games as you age, especially considering reaction times might slow down?
Sure. Gosh, that's a tough one for me. I don't play a ton of competitive games. The two that come to mind that I've played that are sort of competitive would be Rocket League and Overwatch, both of which I've played competitively and just just in both of them, I realize I am a mediocre player. So it's not necessarily that I'm going to stay competitive. I think for Rocket League, there is a recognition that, like, if you want to stay competitive, you got to keep playing it, right? You know, you can't put it down for 6 months and then come back and expect to be right where you were before. You know, but it is kind of like riding a bike. You can jump back in, and after a little while, you get the habits back. So I think first off, you know, for an older player, you just realize that you're not going to be as competitive as the young whippersnappers that are, you know, needing the 360 hertz monitor because their eyes refresh that fast, you know, and we're over here going, well, I can't see the difference between a 24 frames and a 60. But I think, you know, ways to stay competitive is just to stay in it, to keep playing it. I play softball every week and I consider myself competitive in softball. And I realized that if I want to stay competitive, I got to stay in shape. I got to practice. I've got to work out with the team. And that goes beyond the sport, right? And I think this is true for what we see in, like, professional gaming. You know, professional gamers are not just playing lots of hours a day. They're also working on their body. They're working on their mind. They're training their mind. They're stretching. They're exercising. You know, they're drinking plenty of water. They are not just gaming 12 hours a day until they're, you know, getting carpal tunnel syndrome and they're dehydrated and tired. So I think, like anything, if you're going to get good at something, it just takes discipline. But what do you think, Brian, as a person who's better at Rocket League than I am?
Yeah. So, you know, you and I talked a little bit earlier about this. And, you know, one of the things that we talked about that I think is really relevant here is, like, experience from traditional sports, in terms of the way that you do things and the way that you, like, train. And so you mentioned, like, training and practicing. You know, sometimes some of the things that we do to get better at, you know, just anything is that we don't always necessarily train the same way that we play. Like, it's good to play the games, and that's valuable experience. And ultimately, like, a team or even you as a person, you're never going to be good at something unless you do the thing. In other words, like, it's great to practice, but you do have to play the games, right? But practice also is an element in terms of, like, you and I both play Rocket League, and, like, being able to, you know, hit the ball in the air, do an aerial strike, right, where you're trying to score a goal or maybe pass it, that takes practice. And those opportunities only come up so often in a game, especially if you're at a lower rank, right? The ball just isn't in the air as much. You move to higher levels. And that's one thing I've noticed, you know, as I've gotten up in platinum, and at one point I was pretty close to diamond, where, man, the ball is in the air a lot more and the other players are, you know, hitting the ball in the air. And, you know, one of the elements to practice is to do specific aerial training to get yourself better at estimating where the ball is going to be and, you know, trying to get in the right position to, you know, do whatever it is you're trying to do, move the ball in the way that you want it to move. So, and I think this is true of a lot of games. So I think we can take that experience from, you know, I have a lot of ball sport experience from, you know, growing up playing, you know, traditional sports. And I think that's a lesson you can take from there is, like, hey, sometimes you really, to get better, you need to do a specific type of training that maybe you aren't going to see as often in the game, but it is really important when it comes up. So that's one thing. And then the other thing I want to touch on was being a cagey vet, being a cagey veteran player who does all that you've learned. You know, you learn all the sneaky things, the little kind of tricky things. Maybe they're a little dirty. Maybe they're a little under the table, but, like, you know, they work, little tricks and stuff. It's always good to have those in your bag, little moves, whatever it is, you know, use those to your advantage. So in other words, like, you don't necessarily need to be, the fastest, quickest, you know, most instant reaction time. There's a lot you can do in terms of thinking ahead and knowing how the game works to where you can put yourself in a better position so that you can kind of win more by strategy than by being just flat out faster.
Sure. Yeah. And I think being a student of the game, you know, being willing to learn all of the aspects, you know, as you were mentioning the kind of dirtier plays or, you know, things that you can do. But I think the reality is that there are a number of games that have situations that might come up that, you know, unless you've practiced for those situations, then you're not really sure what to do. And so, you know, it's kind of like, I'll give an example from baseball, right? In baseball, there's this thing, the drop third strike, that, you know, if the batter swings and the catcher drops the ball and it's the third strike, then the catcher has to throw the runner out at first, right? This is just like this obscure rule. Probably happens, what, 2-3 times a game, maybe? But it's super rare. Sometimes the guys don't even run. But if you don't know that and you haven't practiced that and the catcher hasn't practiced dropping the ball, picking it up and throwing it to first, then when that play comes up in the game, you're going to struggle with it. So I think just being a student of the game too and practicing those situations, you'll be able to get through it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that ties into as well, just, you know, practicing some of these things that may not come up that often. But again, if you're a student of the game and you've prepared yourself for the different situations that can come up, you know, you have an advantage for sure.
Right. I mean, and that to my mind, like that plays a lot in, when I was playing Overwatch, and I'm guessing the same thing applies to like League of Legends, understanding the specifics of those different heroes and their unique skills and abilities. And you say, oh, okay, well they're playing, you know, this particular tank character. And I know that tank is weak against this DPS character. And so I'm going to switch characters to this DPS character because I know that has an advantage against that tank character. So the little things like that you can, you know, it's not just making shots. It's the strategy that plays out that if you're not a good student of the game, then you don't understand those nuances. So, yeah. So study, stay in school, kids, but stay in school so you don't get schooled. There you go.
Nice. Yeah. Always be learning, right? Always be learning. Even when you lose, there's always something to be learned. Why did I lose? Doing some of that, you know, self-analysis, I think.
I love that. I was talking to a 70-year-old guy today who was telling me he was working on a church soundboard someplace and he was really struggling with it, you know, and he's not as young as some of these young kids, but he's going to try and do his best to learn what he can. And I said, hey, you're at 70 and you're trying to learn a new thing. Good on you. Keep it up. So I love that. That's right. Always be learning, lifelong learning.
All right. Next question.
How has
gaming technology evolved since you started playing, and what advancements have had the biggest impact on your gaming experience?
Well, you know what, when I was a kid, we had this paddle made of wood, a little rubber ball on a string, and we'd hit the ball. Not quite that old, but gosh, when I was a kid, you know, our first computer was a IBM 286. And so it's just barely after the Apple IIe's and the, you know, so I did not have computers that only had two colors, but I think it was 256 colors, right? That was the first computer I had, was 256 colors on a monitor with probably a resolution of 800x600. And a, you know, the only keyboards we had were mechanical keyboards. We had ball mice. You remember the mice balls that, you know, would always get dirty and you'd have to clean them out. And then, you know, you can almost feel the heft of that mouse ball in your hands as you consider it, this ball bearing covered in a weird tactile, you know, rubber. So, you know, yeah, gaming technology, back then, like I said, the first computer I played on was not connected to the internet, didn't have internet, wasn't a thing. Modems were slowly coming around, and eventually we got modems where you could get on and get email. But, yeah, so gaming technology. And then on the console side, you know, I think the first console I played on was Nintendo Entertainment System. Played NES at a friend's house. You know, those buttons. Yeah, just pretty simple buttons. Nobody was considered with an ergonomic controller with your, the thing was a square. It was the rectangle with hard buttons. So ergonomics have come a long way. Obviously just the entire existence of VR, which back then I think they had the Virtual Boy maybe in the 80s, but I don't know. But it was mostly just an idea. But so I think just everything has evolved, and then the craziest thing to me that I still discount a lot when I consider gaming, I still think of PC and console gaming. But when we look at the markets, mobile gaming is the predominant gaming platform. So that's a huge change that I still don't consider mobile as a gaming platform, but it is. So that's a major difference there. What about you, Brian? What are some of the, hopefully I didn't steal any of your thunder there.
I mean, you and I are thinking along similar lines. I was thinking probably the biggest impact on my gaming experience in terms of technology change has been controllers. They've just gotten so much better. When I think about the way that the modern controller triggers work, when I think about the haptic feedback that we get, N64 had rumble, but it was, we have much better, rumble feedback now. And I think about I don't know if you remember, you probably do, David, but some of our younger folks may not have experienced how terrible PC controllers used to be. Like,
oh yeah.
And in the 90s or early 2000s, they were terrible.
In the early 2000s, I found a USB to PlayStation 2 controller adapter. And for a long time, my go-to computer controller for Madden with my friend was a PlayStation 2 controller because it was so much better than some of the, Logitech controllers and then you also had, for a while, it was the idea that everybody was going to play with joysticks, right? Do you remember that? Like joysticks were this great big thing. A joystick is great for a flight simulator. It is terrible for anything else. I had a Thrustmaster. I'm gonna forget. But I had a joystick early on, and I remember thinking I was gonna play all these games with it. And then they came out with the force feedback joysticks that would actually move against you. It was kind of the earliest computer haptics. I think when I think about if there's a single biggest for me, it's graphics. And that's because that's one of the things that I've loved all my years. But you go back and you look at the jump from Super NES or regular NES Mario, right? Which even at that time had decent graphics, right? So you go from Mario, fast forward all the way to, Red Dead, The Last of Us, No Man's Sky, ray tracing, they're games that are like photorealistic, rendering locally on your PC that are almost indistinguishable from real life. And, not to mention the physics engines. I remember the first time I saw a physics engine in the Half-Life 2 E3 trailer, where they're walking through and they're seeing that if you have an item that is made of wood, it reacts like wood and you can break it. And if it looks like water and it refracts the light like water, that was just mind blowing. The idea that there were physics in games. And then you could, with the portal gun, the gravity gun, you could pick things up and throw them and they would bounce off the walls and ragdoll physics. There's no ragdoll physics in Mario.
Nope.
Just crazy how far games have come. And then again, VR, right? Yeah. Like VR, you now have virtual reality, mixed reality, augmented reality. And some of that stuff is getting really, really good too. Half-Life Alyx, just amazing game. And with the full immersion of a headset or flight simulator, you can fly a plane sitting in the cockpit of the plane, manipulating the controls in front of you. with a full 360 degree view. You just look around wherever you look. It's crazy.
It is crazy.
Play table tennis across the world from somebody. And I've heard 11 table tennis is like actually competitive and somehow has little enough lag that you can play table tennis. And that's crazy to me. I've never tried it because I can't justify spending $30 on a table tennis game, but.
Oh, that's awesome.
Technology is wild.
It is wild. I mean, you touched on, you know, one of the biggest ones, which is, you know, touch controls. What a huge change. So, yeah, I mean, and I don't know about, I think almost all of us have some games that we play on these things. So, I mean, that's, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
Huge difference.
Yeah.
Next question. Have you ever experienced burnout from gaming? And if so, how do you manage it?
Yeah, I'll talk about two burnout things for me. The first was physical and the second was emotional. The physical was Rocket League, where I was grinding to finish the last of the rewards in a battle pass, season pass, rocket pass, whatever it's called. And, you know, it was like, I'm going to get this last thing. And the last thing was you had to get like 25, MVPs. You had to get 25 MVPs, which means A, you have to be in a two-player game because you don't get an MVP in a solo. B, you had to win the game. And C, you had to be the best player in your team when you won the game. But the way that it balances out, right, if you win a few games, then it puts you against harder players, and then you're going to start losing a few games. So I was grinding and grinding and grinding and grinding. I remember just being pissed off and unhappy and playing the game, trying to get this reward, and I wasn't even having fun. And at one point, I stayed up, and it was literally 5 o'clock in the morning. And I was like, why am I doing this to myself? Because I want this achievement that will not bring me any balancing amount of happiness to compare with the amount of frustration that I've given myself. And so that was a moment I finally had to put it down and say, I'm done for a little while. And I stopped Rocket League for 6 months. And so I think that was I wish I was more self-aware early to see that and say, okay, I need a pause. But yeah, so I would recommend if you feel like you need a break, take a break. And the second was emotional. After I played The Last of Us Part Two, I just felt like I had given every emotion that I had to that game. And I was like, I don't even know that I can play games anymore for a couple weeks because this felt so emotionally consequential that I can't do it. Like, I'm out of emotion. I can't do it anymore. So there again, I just had to put it down. You know, a few weeks later, I jumped back in, started playing games again. But what about you? You ever have any gaming burnout, Brian?
Yeah, I think that's a good point that you make in terms of being able to recognize when you're burning out. And the quicker that you can recognize that familiar feeling, the better off you'll be in terms of just realizing, hey, I need to do something else. Maybe it's play a different game. Maybe it's just stop playing games for a little while. It just, you know, just depends on where you're at. Maybe you just need to chill out and play a chill game, or maybe just give it a rest, go get some food, drink some water, right?
Go to bed.
Yeah. Get some sleep. That's probably the biggest one, right? We touched on that earlier in terms of managing our schedules. You know, but the other thing I think about in terms of burnout is burning out on toxicity too. You know, that again,
yes,
that's another thing I've run into with Rocket League and with other similar games where just, man, you get in a state where you're just in, you know, you're just emotionally kind of wrecked and you're just angry and you're just not having fun anymore. Like the whole point of the game, you've lost the script, you know, you're just completely tilted, as we would say, right? And
yeah,
you know, having that and doing that analysis of like, why am I doing this? because I'm not having fun anymore. I guess I'm trying to win, but then even when I win, I'm not having fun because everyone on here seems to be a jerk. It's just like, to that is an easy place to burn out, and being able to recognize that is important.
Yeah, Harvey, everyone on here is a jerk, including me. I've turned into a jerk because I'm so upset at this game. Yeah. But when you become, it's like the, you know, you either die the hero or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
That's right.
It's like that. Rocket League.
Yep.
Who knew?
Don't become the villain.
Don't become the villain.
All right. Final question.
Sure.
How do you see the future of gaming unfolding, and what excites you or concerns you the most about it?
Sure. I see the future of gaming. Obviously, I think the trajectories will continue, right? I think there will continue to be better haptics. We didn't even talk about it, but accessibility in games has come a huge long way. Bringing games to people with physical or mental ability challenges or differences, you know, so that's a huge one there. But I think the trajectory of games, I think, will continue. So we'll continue to see games with better storylines, with better visuals, with more expansive universes. We'll see better controllers, better graphics. You know, I hope VR continues. I think it will, but it's a question of what it looks like, you know, 10, 20 years from now. I think mobile gaming will continue to become more and more competitive. And I think, you know, mobile as a platform, I mean, my iPhone 15 can do ray tracing. And apparently, theoretically, they're coming out with Death Stranding on the iPhone. Like, that will be a crazy moment. So it wouldn't surprise me if we see less and less consoles. But I think in general, there's just so much about it that excites me. A thing that excites me that is also troubling is, what are we going to do with AI? I think the possibility for AI as a tool for good, where you could bring about more dialogue options because you're using AI rather than having a voice recorder have to record a million lines, where I think you can bring about a more natural dialogue, you know, where like the writers write this much dialogue, but perhaps the characters have 10 times that much dialogue that they can respond to. I think that's neat. I also think that's troubling because of what it means for the industry, what it means for actors, compensation. I also think there's all sorts of terrible ways that AI can go off the rails. And we've seen, don't even have to get into the ways that AI can be used for less than great things on here. But, you know, I think that's concerning. And then I think the continuing and the occasional, what would you call them? What was that game that came out that like didn't come out? That was, I think it was like Russian backed, and I don't know, games that show high technical trailers, and then they basically just take your money and say, we didn't have any games. So it wouldn't surprise me that with things like AI and Unreal Engine 5, that we see trailers for games that are really just vaporware. And yeah, that's concerning. What about you, Brian?
Yeah, I think we're going to see, you touched on a lot of good things, but something I thought of that maybe you didn't touch on was, I think we're going to continue to see the proliferation of gaming everywhere. You know, we saw Google try it with Stadia and it didn't take, but I think it's a really good idea, right? And now we're seeing some other approaches come forward, and it seems like every gaming company has their own, you know, cloud-based offering. Oh, poor Stadia. Too soon.
Sorry. Just held my Stadia controller for anybody listening.
That's right, yeah. You know, I think we're going to continue to see, like, more mobile devices. We've started to see the proliferation of, you know, the Steam Deck and sort of copycat Steam Decks from other companies. I think that's going to continue. And I think that'll get more sophisticated over time. Those devices are going to get better.
Gaming handhelds.
Yeah. And I think we're going to see, like, there's definitely a potential for like a seamless thing of like, you know, sometimes it's running on my device, sometimes it's on the cloud, and maybe I just don't care. unless it's a game that really depends on running really, really well or something where it really needs to run on the device. But I think, you know, there's going to be more and more of, well, I've got this subscription and this just the device plays it. And I don't know whether it's installed on there or not. I don't care. So I think that's going to continue. It'll be interesting to see what kind of impacts that has on our lives, right? We've got mobile gaming and that can, you know, impact our lives sometimes in negative ways. And what if we have a portable device that, you know, we can take anywhere and play anytime? I mean, I guess we have the Switch and some, we've had portable devices for a while, but it feels like these devices are maybe different. So I don't know, there's maybe some concerns there in terms of, you know, that toxicity of online communities that can happen, being able to reach you at any time.
Sure.
Maybe it's not the best. So, and as you said, AI concerns, the thing about AI is just like, they're like, to me, the possibility space is so huge. It's hard to even imagine all the potential impacts. And so I think we'll just see how that plays out as it goes. Any final thoughts, David?
I don't think so. I was trying to think, you know, in a broad game sense, you know, I'm also excited, I think, to see, it feels like games are finally getting their spot in the spotlight in a way that they have not before, that they're getting there. And, you know, we're seeing nowadays like video adaptations, film adaptations, movie adaptations, and TV show adaptations of popular games, you know, Fallout, The Last of Us, to name a couple, you know, and the game awards shows being sometimes more popular than the movie awards shows. So it's exciting to see games get their place in the spotlight, but I also think games are getting to a peak of a ballooning where, you know, we're at a point where, you know, we're going to have these $1 billion games, you know, Grand Theft Auto 6 coming out sometime, where I don't know how much more of that we're going to get before most companies are scaling back and saying, well, let's not make a 60-hour game. We're just going to make a couple of really good 20-hour games. And, but I think with all things, you're going to have the pendulum swinging. And I'm just excited for the future of gaming to be more mainstream and tell more stories and build more communities. And hopefully people can do it in a way that's also healthy.
Yeah, I was thinking about this too. You know, we had all these questions in terms of, you know, kind of the theme was, what do older gamers have to say? What experience can we sort of pass on? And I think when I was thinking of that, I was also thinking of, we live in kind of an interesting time right now where there are older gamers now. Whereas before, you know, with more experience that we've had a chance to accrue, right? And that's definitely a difference from when I was younger. There was no such thing as an older gamer. I mean, there were older people playing games, but in terms of like the lessons learned, this is a unique time and the start of something. Obviously, that's going to continue. But I thought that was very interesting in terms of, you know, this is kind of new, at least for video games. That's something that's very old, right? Passing right. on our experience and our wisdom, hopefully to younger folks. And I'm always a big advocate for that. I always want to be able to pass on lessons learned, and hopefully we can impact younger folks and maybe give them some advice that's helpful, and ways that you know, they can take advantage of some of the knowledge that we've maybe gained the hard way.
Yeah. And a message to all the younger gamers out there, if you're listening to this sometime in the future, I do want to know if when gamers become old enough and there are enough old gamers, will we have game consoles in our nursing homes? This is what I want to know. I think there probably are some game some Wiis out there in nursing homes already, but you know, I want a PS7 in my nursing home.
That's right.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that just about wraps up our episode for today. So a couple of quick housekeeping thanks and announcements. As always, want to say thank you for listening today. Want to remind everybody that you can support us on patreon.com/churchforgamers. If you want to be a patron of our podcast, again, that's patreon.com/churchforgamers. Huge thanks to our silver level Patreon supporter, Lonnie White. You too could become a silver level Patreon supporter. Also want to invite you to join our community and let us know your thoughts over at discord.churchforgamers.com, where we've got an active community of people. We gather every Monday night to discuss things. We also have a Minecraft server we're kicking off again, and we've got a camp coming up this summer. So to learn more about all of those things, you can go to churchforgamers.com or join us on our community at discord.churchforgamers.com. So this is, again, Reverend David Petty and Brian signing off for Crossfire. And we'll see you in a couple weeks. Crossfire.